I mentioned to Cheryl early this morning that when I was listening to TED Talks, where Cheryl was outlining basically her book, when she got to point two, that in relationships, men and women, this works better when the relationship is more balanced, it's fair. And right away I thought to myself, uh-oh, Max, you're going to have to do much more laundry, do much more groceries,
with
all the things that need to be done, because my wife, Mel, not only does she have a day job, and it works very, very well, but sitting on her front smiling here, but she also has another job. It's at home. It's a real lesson, Cheryl. I want to thank you very much for it. But go ahead.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much, Senator Baucus. As we got to work together so many years ago when I was in Treasury, and you have been such a strong voice for the American people, for the people of not just your state, on solid fiscal issues, obviously, such a strong voice for the development of our economy. And I think the amazing, myself not included, lineup you have speaking here today, this amazing group, is, I think, a testament to how much you continue to do for all of us. So I'm grateful to you.
Thank you. But we're here not talking about me. We're here talking about you and your thoughts and your ideas and your book.
So there's no issue that's more important than the economy. Economic growth doesn't cure all evils, but it goes a long way towards curing a lot of them. Jobs, equality, opportunities for people with all kinds of backgrounds, they're all easier when the economy is growing. And so making sure the economy continues to grow strongly in each of our states, across our country, across our world, is obviously one of the most important things we can do. You know, economic growth lifts people out of poverty. Economic growth creates opportunities for men and women. Economic growth could not be more important. When I think about what we're doing at Facebook, our mission is simple yet ambitious. We want to connect the world. And that's been very important, not just to social missions, but to, apologies.
Bless you.
been on too many planes lately. I think that's been really important to economic growth. So here in Montana, there are 5.2 million people who have connected to local Montana businesses on Facebook. That means that these businesses are sharing what they do every day and able to get jobs. I think sometimes people think of the tech sector as developing tech jobs. And we do. We create jobs in the tech space. But we also help create jobs in other spaces. So these local businesses are everything from your local bake store to your local plumber to some amazing companies that are here are using Facebook to sell their businesses. So I just had an opportunity to meet Sarah, who runs Red Ants Pants, and I met another woman who is wearing pants. Where's Sarah?
We're very proud of Sarah.
But she's apparently a local hero, and she's awesome, and she should be. And she noticed that the pants were kind of being made for men. It's a shocking thing, but like men still run the world. So thank you, Sarah, for noticing. And they should be made for women, and she's made them for women. She's done an amazing job, set up a foundation that's supporting women in leadership. She has 3,500 fans on Facebook that she posts to update. And so what we do in the tech space is so important to creating jobs all over. When you think about economic growth in this summit, you also have to think about equality for women. So women attained 50% of the college graduate degrees in this college degrees in this country 30 years ago. 30 years is plenty of time for us to also get our fair share of the leadership roles. And it's not, yes, applaud, yes. It's not happening. It's not happening in any state in our country. It's not happening anywhere in the world. In the last Senate race, you remember this fondly, women got 20% of the seats in the Senate. And there are all these headlines, women taking over the Senate. You're like, really? That's 20%? That's not close to 50. That's not a takeover. But I think it's important that we give the same opportunities to our girls we give to our boys. I think it's important we notice that we don't. And it's important that we notice that in every leadership, every table where decisions are made, men are still vastly outnumbering women. And if we want the best economic growth we can have for our states and our country, we need every voice at the table. We need everyone to have full opportunities. Warren Buffett has famously said that one of the reasons he was so successful is he was only competing with half the population. true. We need to make no mistake about it. In the United States and all around the world today, when we go to source our leaders, we still source from roughly half the population. More people get in the race, times get faster. If we source from the full talents of our population and use technology, nothing could be more important than that in helping us achieve economic growth. Great to be here with you.
Good. Thanks, Cheryl, so much. I'd be interested, and I think some others here would be interested.
Policy reform, we need a lot of things. But we also need to do three things. We need to change the stereotypes that hold women back. We need to make our partners real partners. And we need women to really lean in. And these are the three points I gave in a TED Talk I did. All over the world, men are expected to be leaders, little boys expected to lead, to be assertive, to be for themselves. Women are expected to give to others, to be communal. We call little girls bossy. It's a word we don't use for little boys because when boys lead, it's expected. There's nothing derogatory about it. But when little girls lead, we tell them they shouldn't. And every language of the world has their word for bossy. I'm going to ask people here a question. If you're a man in this audience, please raise your hand if you've ever been told you're too aggressive at work. There's always a few. About 5%. If you're a woman here, please raise your hand if you've ever been told you're too aggressive at work. That is true all over the world. That comes from that place. And so the next time you're about to call a little girl bossy, take a deep breath and say, that little girl, she has executive leadership skills. Second point of three, we need to make our partners real partners. Women who are married, who work full-time with husbands who work full-time, do 30 to 40% more of the housework and childcare in this country. Women have two jobs, men have one. We have all this language about women doing it all. We never talk about men doing it all because we expect that men can and will have careers and families. We expect women can only do one. Given that 70% of the mothers in this country have to work full-time, having the expectation that you can only do one is really damaging and unfair. Women do both. Women do both all over the world, and we need to get from a world of and for men and a world of or for women to a world of and for both. The only way to do that is to even out in the home. We can't get to equality in the workforce when women bear the great majority of the responsibility at home. The good news is that, and this is what the senator was saying, there's really good reasons for men to do more at home, and it's not just because you want to make the world more equal for women. Men who have more equal partnerships with their wives, they do more, have happier marriages, lower divorce rates, less depression, and more sex. This is documented stuff. And so I tell men around the world, if you want to do something great for yourself and your wife tonight, don't buy flowers. Do laundry. Men who are more active with their children at any income level, regardless of how active the mothers are, have children who do better. They do better in school. They do better professionally. They are better adjusted. They are happier. There's a lot of reason for men to do more in the home. And the third point is that we need to really, really help women see that they are underestimating themselves compared to men and help them lean in.
Great. Thank you. We have a bit of a history in Montana as an agricultural state where the women shared much of the work on the farms. In Montana, a lot of farms, ranches, women do half the work, and the men do half the work. It's a lot more sharing together. I don't know if that's a rural-urban split or not, but I'd be interested if you might have some comment on that. You know, Jeanette Rankin, our first woman to Congress, got elected to Congress, when women couldn't vote, she raised her hand. She did it what had to be done. And lots of ranch families where the work is very hard,
yeah,
are families where both
women
do both. But is there something we translate off to the urban side?
There are great pioneers and female pioneers in Montana. I had an opportunity just now. Melody helped arrange it to meet with all of these fabulous women leaders. What's true all over the world, including Montana, is that women do more work than men. Women do more work. And they get paid less. That's exactly right, whoever added that in. When you actually look at how much work women do, whether it's in agricultural societies to any kind of, everywhere from like the most remote villages in the world to the big cities, women work more than men. They have fewer hours of leisure. That work is a combination of work on a farm, in a company, in a factory, and at home. They just don't have the leadership roles. And to the point someone nicely screamed out, they get paid less. Women get paid 23% less than men in this country for the same jobs. I'm sorry? And that is the issue. So it's not that women don't do as much work. It's that they don't have the decision-making ability men do. They're not sitting at the tables where decisions are made, and they don't get paid what they should be.
Okay, but what special features or attributes do women have that men don't, either in the family or in the workforce, in the business? What are some extra special qualities that men should be thinking about because that women have that they don't?
It's interesting. There's a lot out there on, you know, women are from Venus, men are from Mars, the differences between men and women. And there are some differences. Women are more collaborative. Women can be better communicators, not always. Women can be different kind of leaders. But actually, the biggest difference is not differences between men and women and how they act. The biggest differences, the research shown, are how we react to men and women. So all over the world, and definitely in the United States, success and likability are positively correlated for men and negatively correlated for women. And this difference dwarfs any other difference in how men and women actually act. So when men get more successful, they get elected to the Senate, they chair the Senate Finance Committee, whatever they do, they are, for example, they are considered more powerful and they are also better liked, better respected. More people want to spend time with them, more people like them. When women get more successful and powerful, they are less liked all over the world. And that is the issue. So when we wonder why more men lead, it's because leadership is unequivocally positive for men, but it comes with some real trade-offs for women. Until we understand that and change it, we will not get as many women into leadership roles.
So in addition to your 3 points, what do we do about that? I think most would agree with your basic premise and your conclusion. What do we do about it?
So I wrote a book to try to bring the conversation out. And that was a really interesting personal journey for me. 5 years ago, I would never have said I was a feminist. I would never have been on a stage talking about women. I was told it would end my business career. But I decided that the problem was going on for too long, and I was watching this happen around me. And so I spoke out along with so many other people that have spoken out. Along with the book, started a foundation. The foundation's doing 3 things. We're forming a lean-in community. I hope you all join us, leanin.org or on Facebook. We have taken these lectures. They're the Clayman Institute for Gender Research at Stanford, the kind of executive education that would only be available to a senior executive women, put it online for free. Men and women are watching them, lectures on gender bias, how to negotiate for yourself as a woman, because we have to do it differently than men, and also forming lean-in circles. Men or women, but a lot of times women, 8 to 10 people who get together once a month. There's a woman named Jen here who's been starting them in Montana. We have them in every state. I think we need an active dialogue on gender. Gender's not actually really discussed very much in the workplace. Women are afraid to talk about it because we're afraid we'll be perceived as asking for special treatment. Men are afraid to talk about it. I quote a man in my book who says, runs a big institution, he'd rather talk about his sex life in public than talk about gender. It's a difficult subject, and therefore it's not discussed. And what I'm trying to do, and I know so many other people are trying to do, is bring the gender conversation into the open so that we can address these issues head on, because pretending they don't exist is not working.
So is there a role for colleges, universities to address the gender question and greater sensitize people to these dynamics?
Yes, I met a woman earlier who's running Montana University. Yes, it's really important. So women now get 58% of the college degrees in this country, which is, you know, they're outperforming men at every level of our educational system. Women are less than a third of college presidents. So even in the educational environment where women clearly outperform, we don't encourage enough girls to lead. So I think universities, we have circles starting on, I think, hundreds of university campuses this fall, but I think universities can play a very important role in explicitly encouraging leadership in girls.
I was especially interested in your third point. When you leave, don't leave.
Yes.
Could you explain that a bit, please?
Mm-hmm. In my TED Talk, I talk about something I call Don't Leave Before You Leave. It's also a chapter in my book. And what I see is women making sacrifices very, very early for decisions and responsibilities they don't yet have. There's a woman early on who came to see me at Facebook, and we were talking alone, and she was asking me all these questions. How do I balance work and kids? And I answered for a while, but they just kept coming. And she looked so young, so I said to her, do you mind my asking, how old are you? Do you have a child? And she started laughing. She's like, oh, no, I just graduated from college. I don't even have a boyfriend yet. Because women know that as early as high school and college that they're going to have more of the responsibility in the home, men lean forward and women lean back. In all my years in the workforce, so many men are in my office, at my desk. I want that opportunity. I want this. I want that. I can do that. And even the women I pull in, like, hey, you should take that job, say things like, I'm still learning in my current role, or I might want to have kids one day. When you have children, you have hard decisions to make, and I support men or women working in the home, working in the workforce. But years before you have a child is a good time to lean in because it creates option value. I was at a large financial institution in New York as part of my book tour, and I said to the crowd, it was all the senior women, how many of you want to be CEO? No hands. And I said, okay, why don't you want to be CEO? You work here. And they all said, well, we're not sure we can do it. I said, let me ask you a question. The last time you scheduled a meeting with your CEO, whose calendar was that scheduled on? It was on his. People assume they can't do it, and I'm not saying it's easy. It's hard. It's hard for men, and it's particularly hard for women. But I tell young women, give yourself the option. Lean in, make yourself more valuable. Your company will give you more flexibility. Gain more skills. You will get paid more. You might be able to afford the childcare you need. It may not work. But it's certainly not going to work if you don't try, and that's one of the core messages of Lean In.
Is there some place geographically where this is working out better than others, like some cities, some states, some countries, some companies, just some area that you can think of?
You know, Scandinavia has phenomenal public policy. Here in the United States, we don't give women in most states one day of paid maternity or sick leave. That's a bit abominable, and we should fix it. But the sad thing is this leadership problem is true in every industry and every country in the world. In some ways, the United States is ahead. We still have, you know, a tiny fraction of the Fortune 500 CEOs, and people think we're taking over the Senate at 20%. One of the reasons I wrote Lean In is my daughter, who was 4 at the time, for the President's Day when she was 4, we played this song of the American presidents, and she listened, and she looked up, and she said, Mommy, why are they all boys? And it's a profound question because that's what she's learning. And unfortunately, people think we have a problem in tech or in finance or in manufacturing. We have the same leadership problem in every industry in the world, including industries that are completely predominantly women, like education and the nonprofits. Those industries are still led by men. And so I think there's a lot we can learn from each other. We can learn from some other countries' public policy. They can learn from some of the things we do. But this gender stereotype is holding us back all over the world. The good news is I think we can change it. Once we recognize things, we can change them, and we can change them right away.
What's the role of social networking, either generally or social networking companies like Facebook, Google, others, proactively to raise the consciousness?
I think social networking is hugely important. I think Facebook's been hugely important, along with the other social networks. It used to be that if you wanted to say something to the world, you had to be in the Senate, CEO of a company, own a local TV station, be famous, have your 15 minutes. Now every single person has a voice. Facebook is at 1.15 billion people around the world. Every single one of those people can post. And some of those messages go viral from, you know, the most like far-reaching corners of the world. And so it's how the Lean In community has grown. It's how so many issues have grown. I met a couple of people here who are using Facebook for their businesses, a couple of people here are using Facebook for their nonprofits. I think giving every single human being voice is a huge part of equality. Because when we think about issues, they're so hard. We think about children living in poverty or women who don't have equality. It feels overwhelming. When we see a picture of a starving child, when we see a picture of a woman who's trying to run for office, that becomes real, and it also becomes understandable and manageable and something we can relate and connect to.
You know, but you know, women are just so naturally sensitive. It's wonderful. Men tend not to be. You know, men will sometimes see devastating, horrific scenes and something and not hit them as hard as it does women who've had children. What do we do about that?
Yeah. So women invest more in their children than men do. Yes. Women invest more of the money they earn in their children. Women invest more of their time and resources. I think we need to encourage men to invest just as much, but I think we also need to recognize the special role women play. I think that's why women in leadership is so important. One of the other impetuses for me in writing my book, and I tell the story in my book, is Lima Bowie won the Nobel Peace Prize a couple of years ago for her role in the uprising in Liberia. And she was doing a book talk in my home, and she was asked by the women, you know, Silicon Valley women, what can we do? What can we do to keep things like the atrocities of Liberia from happening? And I thought she would say support local organizations or, you know, go lobby the UN, and she didn't. She said more women in leadership. And she said, and not just in international organizations, but in your companies and your Senate and your House. Because she believes, and these were her words, women in power don't rape people. Women in power won't pillage villages. Now, we haven't had enough women in power to prove to ourselves that that's true, but I say we might as well try it.
So if I understand you, and I agree with you, we have to work towards sort of a tipping point where it becomes cool for men to share co-equally. It's cool to have women at the table.
That's right.
All that has to be cool.
That's exactly right.
And just your book was certainly helping make that happen. Any other thoughts on how we can, what else we can do to help make it cool?
You know, the issues for men are, when we talk to men about Lean In, we don't want men to help women as a favor. And the good news are, just like there are issues, reasons for men to help women at home, there are really good reasons for men to be very focused on equality for women in the workplace. We have a huge war for talent going on. If you are the man whose company can attract better people from half the population, you're going to be more successful. Since Lean In, CEOs like John Chambers at Cisco, Bob Moritz at PwC, over and over, one after another, you can see it all on our website, have jumped in and said, I want to be for this. I have a friend here with me today, Dave Morin. He was one of the early Facebook employees. He's from Montana, and he started a company called Path. 20 million people using it already. It's private social networks. He has a fabulous wife, Britt, who also has a full career, is also a founder, just raised money for her company as well.
Well, why isn't she more important than he?
Well, I mean, he's here with me. So.
Okay.
I'm just
teasing you that Dave's a guy.
Dave's a guy. But if you want to see examples of men who are both leading companies and supporting their wives and supporting women in their companies, he's a great one. Another one is John Donahoe, the CEO of eBay. He wrote a piece that's on our website. He talked about how during his path of his career, he took steps back for his wife's career, and he became CEO of eBay. So I think men worry that if they do more at home, it'll hurt their careers. I think it'll help their careers. They'll have more equal partnerships, stronger marriages, happier children. They'll also be more successful at work.
Is this problem greater in the financial services industry? Is it greater in Wall Street, for example, than Silicon Valley?
The numbers for women in leadership roles in this country and industries range from 11% to 21%. So, you know, if here's 0 and here's 100, here's 11 and here's 21, it's fundamentally an issue that we don't like women who lead in all industries. Some industries are slightly worse. Manufacturing is particularly tough. But even industries like retail, again, like nonprofits, are predominantly led by men, even though the workforce is predominantly women.
This is super. What's your impression of Montana thus far? I know you haven't been here long. You met with a great bunch of folks over here.
It's a beautiful state. The people are fantastic. And I think this Montana Jobs Summit represents the best of America. This is what we need. We need great people with energy and entrepreneurship who care about equality, who care about economic growth, coming together from the private sector, from the government, and from the corporate sector. And so I think we need more of this all around the country.
So when are you going to run for the Senate or for president?
Not running for office. This is all the leaning I can do. I'm leaning
as far as I know how to lean. We're going to really lean in here. We're going to do a little more.
I am leaning in. You know, I really love my job at Facebook. I really love what my foundation is doing. And I love seeing the energy of women and men for equality all over the world.
Yeah, you got two women in the Senate from California.
It's true. They're in the 20% takeover.
They're very good people, too. They're super. Okay. Mel's handing me a little note here. The last question is from, let me get her. What is it? It's from Ursula Wild. Ursula is studying liberal arts and is a mother of two young boys. She's also the editor of the college paper. She joins us from Flathead Valley Community College. Ursula.
Hi, Cheryl. My name is Ursula Wild, and I'm studying liberal arts at Flathead Valley Community College. I'm also a mother of two little boys and just starting out in my first internship. In your book, you stated the workplace did not evolve to give us the flexibility that we needed to fulfill our responsibilities at home. I'm wondering, do you believe that company workplaces are becoming more or less flexible in their face time demands? And also, how important is it to be visible versus reliable and a top performer?
It's a great question. So two trends are happening that kind of go pull against each other. One trend is, you know, the extension of the working day. Technology has extended the working day for all of us. We're sorry. But it used to be in my parents' generation that, you know, there was nothing to do at home. Now we can connect, we can email, we can do all of the things, most of the things we can do in the workplace, and the working day is extending. The other impact technologies have is we can be more flexible. It used to be that you couldn't do the work from anywhere else, and those two trends are pulling against each other. One of the things I talk about in my book is the importance of measuring results, not FaceTime. If you, as a company, measure FaceTime, you will be rewarded with FaceTime. If you talk about the people who are working really hard rather than the people who are getting great results, people will work really hard but not focus on results. In my job at Facebook, Mark and I try to run the company very focused on results. We had one employee, actually, for a while who famously was one of our absolutely highest performers, but just didn't like to be in the office very much at all. And we would publicly applaud him. You know, no one's seen Chamath in a week, but look what's happening. And we were publicly saying his results were amazing. If he feels like doing it, you know, sitting in his basement, go ahead. Now, not every company can do that. Different companies have different constraints, but many more companies can do this. I quote Colin Powell in my book. If there was ever an institution we would think of as not particularly flexible, it might be the U.S. military. And in his leadership role at the U.S. military, he talked about how he did not want to reward FaceTime. He wanted, when the going got tough, for his people to be there, and when it was easy, he wanted them home with their families. And I think that's a great example we can all follow.
Super. This is long enough. We have more questions. And I think we have to sign off here, because that's the point. I get a sign here. It says, yeah, there it says end again. That dreaded three letters over there, that three-letter word. But I'm just, thank you, Cheryl, so very, very much for coming, and thanks for your service earlier over at Treasury and also at Google, Facebook, and here. I have a hunch we're going to hear a lot about you and look forward to that. It just urges to keep it up. Thanks so very, very much.
Thank you for the opportunity to be here.
Thank you.